Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm Chris McDaniel, political reporter for St. Louis Public Radio and BeyondNovember.org. Joining me, as always, is...
Jason Rosenbaum with the St. Louis Beacon.
Joe Manis with the St. Louis Beacon.
Now, we have three topics to get to today.
Three
segments, and I will not let you guys go over. I will be as adamant as Jim Lear was last night. I will stop you.
Looks like we'll be out of this tomorrow.
Yeah.
I hate to bash on a fellow University of Missouri alum, but he did not... This was not his best moment.
So. A little out of control.
So we will show, we will demonstrate how people.
Well, yes.
Stay within the lines.
Joe said that there needed to be a mom there. But so you'll have to keep us under wraps today. But of course, starting off.
The A block.
The A block, if you will.
The Aiken block.
Yes. The A block is the Aiken block.
Yeah, we're aching to talk about Aiken.
Oh, good one. Good
what
one,
you
good
gonna
one.
Do when Aiken mania runs wild on you, brother?
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
Okay, the latest news is earlier this morning, his campaign acknowledged that he is amending his federal... financial disclosure reports to include pension payments that he's gotten at about $15,000 a year, and that the last 10 years he's forgotten to do that. So he's having to amend 10 years worth of reports to include that $15,000. Now, depends on what you're looking at. The McCaskill allies say this is a big deal because they contend that if Claire McCaskill had done something like that, then it would be all over the place. On the other hand, McCaskill did some amending of a number of campaign finance reports some time back. And it, while it was newsworthy, and I actually did a big story on it at the time, it wasn't something that was a game changer. Let's put it that way.
Right.
I'm not sure that this sort of adds... Basically, it just adds to the narrative that Aiken, there are a few little rough spots. Now, some national outlets have also noted that he last year had to amend his reports to include some property that he owned that he'd forgotten to include. So this just sort of adds to the narrative that Aiken has a few problems.
I think it adds to that narrative, but I think it also makes him less likely to be able to go after McCaskill for her financial gaffes that she's had.
Well, her financial gas, in quotes, I mean, was a plane that she didn't pay taxes on for 3 years.
Right.
Which she, you know, put that information forward, and I guess she eventually paid and sold the plane. But that was a, I mean, even on, by her own admission, was kind of a goof on her part.
Well, now this is that was an unusual case. This happened about 15 months ago when I was actually on the call. And the storyline had been that it turned out that there was like one flight and a half of a flight that were campaign flights. So she was having to reimburse the federal government for that. Well, then she says on the call that, well, I've got this other little thing to add. And she said that she had then been going through all the record keeping of the people who were there. Bookkeepers who handle this stuff with the plane, and that's when, and they also checked everything, and that's when they found out that St. Louis County, unlike some other places, does assess property taxes on planes, and that plane had been parked near Spirit Airport.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would think that people would have been paying attention to that because this was 3 years worth. And when she told us, she said that someone was hand delivering a check for over $300,000 to St. Louis County. Like that day, to pay the make the payment, but there was also thought that maybe one of the news outlets had heard something about it, and it was going to be coming out. And basically, she was smart enough to try to get ahead of it. But the point is that the whole thing with the plane has been probably her biggest attack line for her opponents for a year and a half, as far as something that resonates with voters, because it's simple. It's not complicated. This thing with his pension, I think that does change the dynamic just because of what Chris said. I think it makes it more difficult for Aiken to be slamming her for what she didn't pay when it turns out he's got some financial disclosure problems as well.
Right, but there was a bigger thing that came out this week with Aiken, that national
correct
publications started circulating this video of him on the floor talking about women getting abortions when they weren't pregnant, which caused a lot of people to scratch their heads.
And in this, to be fair, this video took place 4 years ago, in 2008.
So technically, there was a website that says, did Todd Akin say something stupid today.com? Technically, that wasn't today that he said that.
It was four years ago.
Right. But, I mean, just on its face, it seems like kind of a jarring, bizarre statement.
What was most jarring, however, is that the campaign did not step away from that statement. They, in fact, doubled down on it. They released a statement from a former Planned Parenthood director in Texas. Jason, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, actually, Joe was the one who reported on it, so I'll defer to her.
Well, this has been a storyline, frankly, within the anti-abortion movement for a while. I mean, earlier, before we went on the air, I had gotten some emails from some anti-abortion activists that I know in the state, and they were sending me allegations from the 80s claiming that the abortion clinic here in St. Louis, before it was taken over by Planned Parenthood, they were alleging that it may have done that. Now, there is no proof, and Planned Parenthood officials here in St. Louis have been very specific, noting that they're required to do pregnancy tests and required to do an ultrasound before the procedure is done. So they're like, no way is someone who is not pregnant going to have an abortion done on them because they're required to do these tests. Now, the woman that he quotes in his release was actually a former Planned Parenthood director in Texas, and she is now active in the anti-abortion movement. Depending on which side you're on, the abortion rights people say she has no credibility. The anti-abortion people say that they agree with her stance. But the point is, it does resurrect this abortion issue, which then resurrects his legitimate rape statement, which then resurrects all that stuff. And I'm not sure. I mean, let's put it this way. The allies of McCaskill, I'm sure, were happy about this.
Absolutely.
So we're going to move into another bizarre incident. I hate to keep using that word because it's such a has a pejorative connotation, but
zany.
We're going to move into another zany moment, and that was when the proponents of an amendment to alter the Missouri plan, or the Missouri nonpartisan court plan, released a statement saying that they were not going to mount a campaign to pass an amendment that was making a number of changes, which we could go into all the details, but it probably would take a little too long. But basically, the bottom line is it would make it easier for the governor to have control over appointees to the Supreme Court and Appeals Court, because he would be able to appoint all the appointees in this board or commission.
During his tenure. Yeah, his or her tenure.
So why this was striking is this had already made the ballot. It was passed by the legislature. And when you have a situation where something's already there and they say, oh, we're not going to campaign for it when there's opposition. I mean, granted, I've only been doing this politics thing for 6 years, but I've never seen anything like this before. Have you, Joe?
Well, nothing specifically like this, but sometimes you do see things where they get now in this case, well, what happened is that the legislature that passed it did not write their own ballot language, which they can do.
Right. And in fact, during the Rules Committee deliberations, soon to be former State Representative Susan Carlson made that point, and that it was going to cause a whole bunch of litigation. I think Republicans just wanted to pass the bill, because if they made any changes to it, it would have gone back to the Senate and it could have been filibustered. But, I mean, they were warned, I think, about that possibility. And
So what they did was they kicked it over to the Secretary of State's office. Now, even if the legislature had written the ballot language, it might have been litigated. But the point was that then shifted to the Secretary of State's office. Secretary of State's office wrote the ballot summary that appears on everybody's ballot. The proponents of Amendment 3 didn't like it, so then they sued because they didn't like the description she had. That's been going back and forth. It's now pending before the state Supreme Court, and here it is, what, just over a month before the election?
Right.
And at the same time, they've been doing some internal polling on both sides, and they haven't been able to raise money. So some think that this was done in part because the proponents of Amendment 3 see that the opponents have more money, see that they may or that the legal fight's still underway, and see that maybe it's better just to cut their losses, and it still could pass.
Yes,
even if they're not
that's
doing
the
anything.
Thing, and I've written about this before. I do think the anti. I gotta be careful to describe the opponents of this, because the people who are pushing this are you could probably say are opponents of the Missouri plan. The people who are opposing it are more proponents of the Missouri
lawyers.
Plan. And you know the opponents of this amendment will probably still run advertising telling people not to vote for this, because if there's no campaign whatsoever, there's no advertisements, no effort. More often than not, those ballot initiatives end up passing. Because people don't really know better or
Correct.
Don't know enough about
Correct.
It to vote against it, because no one's telling them that.
Correct.
So if there isn't enough of a concerted effort, or if that effort kind of gets washed in between some of the other ballot initiatives that are races, this could still pass. I'm not saying it's a likely outcome, because there's not going to be – because it's a controversial idea. It's not something without opposition within the legal community, but it's not out of the question that it could happen.
Correct, because the ballot language isn't that – there are no alarm bells when you read it.
Right.
You know, so I think the opponents, I think, are still going to have to – if they want to make sure it doesn't pass – we'll probably still need to run some ads or do some stuff, because the proponents, even though they're not campaigning, they can still win.
You know, in my interactions with a lot of politicians, I've been asking recurring question of, you know, what do you think of this initiative? And I have not had a single one of these politicians tell me that they support it. So I think that's pretty telling about it. But let's go on to talk about another topic. We are affiliated with BeyondNovember.org. So let's talk about an election that actually is taking place beyond November.
It's literally beyond November. That's my terrible impression of Rob Lowe in Parks and Rec. So the mayoral elections is in March 2013. And in the last two cycles, and I think Joe can attest to it, they haven't been terribly excited or competitive races.
And Mayor Slay is seeking a fourth term.
It's an unprecedented fourth term, I
correct,
believe.
Correct. Yeah, we have not had a four-term mayor.
And yesterday at Squire's Restaurant Annex, which, for the record, was where me and my wife were married on March 31st, Lewis Reed, the president of the Board of Aldermen, announced that he was running for mayor against Slay. Now, this has not been a particular surprise to people who follow city politics, but it is notable in the sense that it is for the first time, I guess, since 2001 that a credible opponent is coming forward to challenge Slay. Now, I think that there's various talks within people who follow politics of whether Reed can be competitive against someone like Slay, who is going to have more financial resources, is going to have some endorsements that could help him, and who's just been mayor for so long that he has high name recognition. But as someone who lives in the city, I think that this is going to be I'm trying not to be hyperbolic. I was actually thinking about this beforehand, but I do think this is going to be a really important election for the city about where it wants to go into the future. It's going to be kind of a question of showcasing the city's meandered problems and challenges and asking who's the best person to deal with the problems of crime, the problems of poverty, the problems of education, which obviously the mayor is not directly involved
but,
in.
And the public has never really understood that, that the mayor in St. Louis, as in many cities, doesn't have any direct involvement in the school board, although the mayor does, I think, fill vacancies.
Right. But my point being that it's going to be kind of a question of putting these challenges and problems of the city forward. And I guess trying to see if a mayor can do enough to really combat such large challenges, and be whether, you know, the past 4, 8, 12 years have been working for the city. I'm sure that people who support Slay are going to say, you know, maybe the city isn't there yet, but they've done enough to where they can show things where the city has improved. And I'm sure that people who are proponents of Reed are going to try to have this new direction change sort of angle. You know, for someone who lives in the city and for someone with a grandfather who grew up in the city, you know, it's something that I think even if you're not an avid follower of politics, it's going to be something that you're going to follow next year.
Because the city of St. Louis, even though technically most of the people in the metro area don't live in the city. The city is sort of, in some ways, the heart. I mean, people still come downtown for entertainment events. They come down. The city is somewhat of an engine, even though St. Louis County, which surrounds it economically, is the huge behemoth in the state. They need the city. I mean, it's
and that's the interesting thing. Like in 2014, when Dooley goes up for reelection, Dooley actually, I think, has a lot more power than the mayor of the city of St. Louis. But I think that the mayor of St. Louis has a little bit more visibility since he is kind of the symbolic embodiment of the political class in the city. So
yeah.
It'll be a race to watch for sure.
Now, as you know, the mayor, any mayor, is one of three people. The real power in the city of St. Louis is through a board called Board of Estimate and Apportionment. And Lewis Reed is one of the members, the aldermanic president. The other one is the comptroller. And going back before you guys were born, I'm literally in the 1970s when I was covering City Hall, we had a case where we had the mayor and we had the other two people who were in the Board of Aldermen were both running for mayor or planning to run for mayor. So those meetings sometimes can get so loud that you could be out in the hall of City Hall. And the meetings which took place in this little anteroom in the mayor's office, you could hear it through all those heavy oak doors. You could hear them screaming at each other. So this is, I'm sure, will be nothing like that.
Now, one thing that a possible podcast listener, Damon Jones, a committee man, mentioned on Twitter yesterday in the Sixth Ward, will there be a mysterious third candidate that kind of comes out of the woodwork? I know that kind of happened in the last election when Maida Coleman was supposed to run against Slay. Somebody with the same last name as her, or a similar last name, came forward and she decided to run as an independent. Do you see that happening here, or is that less likely since it's two, you know, prominent candidates here?
I don't know. I mean, that seems to be a tradition in St. Louis politics of somebody who nobody knows and often who doesn't campaign but who just happens to be on the ballot. This goes back, again, before you guys were born. But it is I don't know. I think that this race, because Slay has so much more money going into it, and also the assumption is, since Slay endorsed Congressman Lacey Clay, who managed to defeat Russ Carnahan in the primary, and probably one of the marquee races of the primary, that Clay, who is arguably with Dooley, the two major African-American figures in the region, the assumption is that Clay will endorse Slay and that Clay will be encouraging his supporters to go with Slay, which could set up kind of this somewhat of a almost like a soap opera because Reed is close friends with Russ Carnahan.
Right.
I mean, there's this whole subtext.
Right. Now, the only other thing, and obviously, I think the mayor even mentioned that Dooley was going to endorse him. Does that actually help him since he lives in the county? Does he have any sway over voters in St. Louis City? Or what do you think does that just matter? Is it just kind of this showcase that he has a litany of support across the board or something?
Well,
it
showcased that he has strong African-American support, which is what Slay wants to show since Reed is African-American. But and also may send a message to donors.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, try not to be hyperbolic. The race could end up not being close. It might end up being close. But I just think when you have a mayor's race that actually has two candidates in it who are credible, legitimate candidates, it does get you thinking about, you know, how this is going to be a conversation about the future of St. Louis. And, you know, for a city with so many things on its mind, I mean, I think that could be a real positive thing for people who live there. So
yeah, and it will, you know, and definitely it will be somewhat of a referendum on the mayor, Mayor Slay, since he is seeking an unprecedented fourth term. We've only had a handful of three terms mayors.
So if he wins, could he be called the FDR of St. Louis?
Arguably.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Well, coming in at 19 minutes and 50 seconds.
Wow.
A lean 19 minutes, 50 seconds. I think it's safe to say that I did a better job moderating than Jim Lear.
Yeah. We expect you to corral Ryan and Biden.
I could not do that job. That job, that person has his job cut out for him. We are, of course, on Twitter. You can follow me at CS McDaniel, Jason.
Jay Rosenbaum.
And Joe. Jay
Mannies.
And you can read all of our work at beyondnovember.org. I'm also at stlpublicradio.org.
stlbeacon.org.
stlbeacon.org.
We work at the same place, so it's easy.
And, you know, free
and beyond
of
November.
And beyondnovember.org. And you know what? Free of charge, we're throwing in. Joe and I were on a panel last night with Neil Conan and Ken Rudin, you know, just name dropping a little bit.
From
Talk of the Nation. So if you're interested in listening to that, that will also be on the site. But we will be back next week. Until then, so long.
So long.
Adios.